B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
My guest today is Mark Morden from Lamb of God, who has his solo record out called Anesthetic. This record is killer. We talk about whether or not this is the biggest project he's ever worked on. We compare it to Slash's record, even talk about him having a bigger profile, as well as working with Chester Bennington and how that came about.
We had this song we'd been working on, my producer and I, and we had this idea that Chester Bennington would sure sound great on it.
We talk about the special guests on the album, and there are many, as well as crafting each song to fit each guest. Plus, if he's surprised by the attention this record has brought him.
I knew we had some cool songs, and I was really excited about doing it, but it's really become bigger than kind of a bigger deal than what I'd anticipated.
I asked him what kind of feedback he's gotten from the diehard Lamb of God fans, as well as what they're doing for 2019.
We've got quite a bit of touring with Lamb, too. We've got 3 weeks in North America, you know, starting in May, and then we go to Europe for another few weeks in June and July, so plenty of work to do this year.
Lamb of God guitarist Mark Morden is my guest today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thank you as always for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Got a good one on tap for you today with Mark Morden from Lamb of God. Coming up later on, it's Al back with rock news. We talk about Slipknot. We talk about the Bush live tour. Dave Mustaine and Dimebag Darrell. Could Dimebag have joined Megadeth back in the day? This is kind of an old story that just recently was rehashed through an interview that Dave did. And we'll talk a little bit about that and why Dimebag didn't join Megadeth in the late 80s. Plus, a former child star from the movie School of Rock in some trouble with the law. We'll talk about that coming up as well. Once again, if you like this podcast, a 5-star rating would be great, a review, and of course, share with your friends. And thank you so much for checking it out, as we really enjoy doing this for you guys. This new record from Mark Morton's pretty killer, Anesthetic. It's got all sorts of special guests from Jacoby Shaddix. I mean, Miles Kennedy, Mark Lanegan from Screaming Trees. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And it's a really good record, man. It's pretty strong. And Mark Morton's been out, pounding the pavement, doing interview after interview for this record that dropped on March 1st. And so I guess my big thing talking to him was to try to get some questions that he hadn't been asked before. Of course, I have to ask the questions, about Chester Bennington and whatnot. And he talks a little bit about that and what the guys from Linkin Park and his family and stuff think about the track that Chester's on. And we get into that here coming up as well. But it's tough sometimes when you're, these guys have been doing interviews for weeks and weeks and weeks. And now it's my turn to try to do something and ask them some different kind of stuff. And I hope I succeeded a little bit today. It's Mark Morden on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast as we were connected.
Hello.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Doing well.
All right, man. Okay, congratulations on the record, man. This thing is really killer. I mean, I know you've done tons of interviews. You've really promoted this a lot, so hopefully I won't ask you the same old boring questions. But, I mean, just tell us a little bit about the album.
See how you do.
Yeah, well, <it's, laughs> now you're challenging me. All right, well, let's just talk about the record. I mean, it's the first thing I thought of when I heard the record, and I'm sure you've heard this before, is the Slash record from a couple years ago. I think it's that good.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that first Slash solo album is definitely kind of a template for at least the structure of how we did with, with all the different guest vocalists and that kind of thing. And, that was the big thrill for me, was having the opportunity to collaborate with these people and to find that so many talented people would be so generous with their artistry, with their creativity to come into this thing and work with me on it.
Yeah, is this the biggest project you've ever, sunk your teeth into?
Is it the biggest project? Well, it's different. I mean, I've done quite a number of albums with my band, Lamb of God. Mm-hmm. And, those are things that we all take very seriously and work very hard on. So in terms of the scope of the project, I don't know that it's any bigger or less big than those. But I can tell you that my level of attention to detail is definitely on a different, different level with this kind of project. There are so many decisions and stuff that normally might be spread out or allocated throughout the group when I'm just a member of the band, whereas on this one, I kind of have to everything sort of channels through me.
Yeah, I guess that's
a different level of commitment.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was kind of getting at. It's like, you know, with the banding, there's other guys to bounce stuff off of. This one has your name on it. So, man, this is all about you.
It is. Yeah. I mean, a lot of, you know, pretty much the creative decisions, at least, all kind of ended with me, and a lot of the work too, a lot of the promotional stuff where normally I would, you know, we'll let Randy do that one, but I'm carrying all that stuff too. But it's cool. It's a privilege, man. It's an honor. I'm just excited that people care enough to want to talk to me about this project I work on and want to check out the music I'm doing.
Yeah, it's really cool, man. I suggest it to anybody. It's got all sorts of different flavors. And before we get into the record a little bit more, I wanted to ask you, you know, you're just talking about, you know, before, like, you know, you kind of push stuff off on Randy and the other guys in the band and stuff. I mean, how do you accept this role, taking on a bigger profile for yourself?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I see it as taking on a profile. I mean, with the Lamb thing, we kind of spread things out amongst us. Obviously, Randy's our singer and frontman, so he does carry more of the press stuff than that. Just kind of comes with the position. But, you know, we all do our share in that band, and so I'm used to doing this stuff. There's just been a lot of it. It's been more concentrated. But like I said, I'm happy to do it. I'm grateful for the chance.
Yeah. So Cross Off, the video with the song with Chester Bennington was just released, and I was surprised to hear that you had never met or worked with Chester before. How does a guy like that just, you know, get on the record?
Well, we met when we worked on the tune, for sure.
Right.
But yeah, we didn't have any history before collaborating on the song. Yeah, it was kind of, you know, just took a shot at it. We had the song we'd been working on, my producer and I, and we had this idea that Chester Bennington would sure sound great on it. And I was a little skeptical that we would get his ear, but as it turns out, he was a fan of some of my work with Lamb, and I was, you know, able to get the song to him. He was interested in hearing it, and once he heard it, he was all the way in. And then from there, we corresponded about kind of where it was coming from lyrically, direction we wanted the song to have. And then when we got in the studio, he had a notebook full of lyrics and vocal melodies, and I had the same, and we talked about where we were coming from, mashed them together, and wrote this song. And then I got to, you know, be in the studio with Chester recording that amazing performance.
Yeah, it's great. Have the Linkin Park guys or his family given any feedback on it?
Well, it certainly had their blessing in terms of the release. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have done that without their blessing. And yeah, Mike, I haven't talked to Mike Shinoda directly about it, but he did. He was on Twitter, I think one of the social medias, talking about how, you know, how much he dug the song, and talking about how Chester had played it for him when the rough mixes came back, and how excited Chester was about it. So I thought that was real cool of Mike to share that.
Now, as opposed to working with Lamb and working with, like, you know, pretty much the same guys for every record, I mean, what kind of stuff did you learn about working with all these different special guests? I mean, studio tricks, the way that they work, the work ethic, anything stick out to you?
What a good unique question. I mean, I have to think about that. I think you know, I don't know that I learned anything about the recording process. I mean, the takeaway for me was just how humbled I was that so many of these great artists would want to even collaborate with me, you know. And there was just so many cases where I reached out kind of sheepishly, not even sure if someone would want to hear the song, and they, you know, every time to come back with a yes, and yes, I'd love to work on it. It was just really humbling, and that to me was the big takeaway, was just the thrill of being able to make music with all these great artists.
Yeah, I think one of the strong points of this record is that each, you know, obviously, you know, all the songs kind of fit the artists that are helping you out with them, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but I think it just fits so perfectly. I mean, the song with Josh is great. Obviously with Chester and, you know, and Jacoby Shaddix, the song with Mark Lanegan, like Screaming Trees, like, I'm old enough, I don't know who you've been talking to today, but I played the Screaming Trees when they were first brand new on the radio, and I thought they should have been lumped in with the other guys, but it's so cool to hear his voice on one of your tracks too.
Yeah, I'm old enough too. I saw the Screaming Trees live, and I'm just such a huge Mark Lanegan fan through all of his career, his stuff with the Trees and on through you know, his work with Queens of the Stone Age and his solo stuff all the way along. So that was a really exciting for me. One of the big thrills of this project was to be able to collaborate with Mark on a song. I love the way it turned out.
Yeah. Are you surprised by the attention that this record is garnering for you?
You know, honestly, I am a little bit surprised. I knew we had some cool songs, and I was really excited about doing it, but it's really become bigger than a bigger deal than what I'd anticipated. You know, that's just, it's just awesome that the music reaches people and touches people and they responded to it like that. I'm just happy to be a part of these songs and to have had the experience of working with so many great people. But it's a thrill to watch it go, and I am a little bit surprised, and I'm super stoked.
Yeah, how much are the Lamb of God fans digging on this record?
They seem to be really into it. I mean, there is we did include some pretty heavier stuff, some thrash metal stuff onto the track list. Originally, I was going to steer clear of that stuff because I do so much of it with Lamb, and the premise of this project was to stretch out and do things a little bit more diverse stylistically. But my producer kind of, he sort of prodded me a little bit to put some more traditional kind of thrash metal into this for the Lamb fans. And I think it wound up being the right call, because songs like The Never with Chuck Billy and The Truth Is Dead with Randy Bly and Alyssa Whiteklutz are, you know, being pretty well received by the Lamb folks.
Yeah, those songs are definitely heavy. So, I mean, does this push back any sort of plans you had for Lamb of God for this year, or are you guys just plowing forward with what you had going on?
Oh, no, this is all done in between the Lamb schedule. That's definitely still my priority musically, and we got a lot going on. We're pretty deep into writing a new record, and got quite a bit of touring with Lamb too. Got 3 weeks in North America, starting in May, and then we go to Europe for another few weeks in June and July. So plenty of work to do this year.
Well, I see that this tour that you're going on here as the solo artist, it doesn't come through Detroit, but maybe we'll see you here sometime playing some of the songs off this in the future then.
Yeah, I hope so. Once, we're going to do this tour with Light the Torch, and then I've got some Lamb dates booked, but hopefully maybe later in the year we're going to go out again with the solo thing and try and hit some more markets with it.
Well, I got to tell you, man, I'm not the biggest Lamb of God fan, but I think that this record is really killer. I love that it kind of shines a new light on you, for me anyways. And I hope that in your 297 interviews you've done before this one didn't bore you to tears. So.
No, man, you lived up to your goal, man. You got some fresh questions today, man. I got to give you a thumbs up on that. Thanks for the time and all the thought provoking interview.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much, man. Do appreciate it. And like I said, killer record. Congratulations, dude.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you backing up.
All right, we'll see you in Detroit next time you're around. Thanks.
All right, cheers, man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
So you're a big Lamb of God fan, right?
Yeah, I do like Lamb of God quite a bit. I like the heavier music.
Yeah, you know, I'm not, like I said in the interview, I'm not a huge Lamb of God fan, but this record I'm really intrigued by because, like you said in the last podcast that we talked about this, is that, all the songs kind of fit the singers that they have on there. I was surprised to find out that, he had never met Chester Bennington before they recorded that. It was, you know, as he talked about in the interview, that that the producer kind of brought that up. And it's like, it's kind of cool that these guys, I mean, let's face it, Chester Bennington is a big name in the world of rock, and
yeah,
take
course.
The time out and do this and help out, you know, somebody who's in, you know, I'm obviously in the heavy metal and the heavy world, you know, Mark Morton, you know, he's in Lamb of God, that's cool, but it's like he ain't the level of Chester Bennington for sure. But it's like for Chester to go and help him out and do that, and you know, Kobe Shaddix and Josh Todd and like all these guys,
Miles Kennedy,
I thought it was great, man. So it's
I know, I was kind
cool.
of felt when I saw that Miles Kennedy had a song, I was like, man, he better be careful because he got sucked into Slash's band just by guesting on a solo album, and I'll look at him.
I know.
He's a busy guy.
Yeah, this record reminds me a lot of that Slash record because, you know, Slash had, like, Miles and had actually a couple Miles songs, had Ozzy, had, you know, Lemmy from Motorhead.
Did he have a Corey Taylor song on that first one, too?
Corey Taylor's been on every record, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Since 2009, he's been on everyone's record.
Yeah, if not, it was an Apocalyptica song, maybe both, but yeah. I seem to remember Corey Taylor on there, too.
Yeah, so anyways, it's really cool. It's a great album, and if you get a chance, go check that out. And, you know, like I said, I'm not a huge Lamb of God fan, but I think that this one's really good. And like I also said in the interview, you know, he's done about 658 interviews for this album, so yeah. I feel like I may be the last one.
Yeah, well, and I am a Lamb of God fan, and I still say check out this new album. It's pretty good. I like it.
Yeah, no question. So, yeah, like working with Lamb of God, you know, there's like five guys. Well, working with Slipknot, there's like nine guys. How do you figure that whole thing out? Hey, by the way, real fast, not that they'll hear this, but happy birthday to my friend Chris Fain, number three. Just celebrated his birthday last week. And, yeah, they got their record. They got their tour. It's, yeah, Corey Taylor, just he kind of seamlessly slides over into Slipknot now. Now Stone Sour will take their two-year hiatus.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You said that, you know, there's nine guys in Slipknot to work around. You've also got this entirely other band you got to work around, too, sort of, you know?
Yeah, well, people don't know this, but, you know, Corey was in Stone Sour before Slipknot.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of how that works.
Yeah.
And then when he got some success with Slipknot, decided to, dig up his other band and get that going. And Roy from Stone Sour is on this new record with Mark Morton as well. So.
Yeah, but speaking of that new album, we do have a release date for the new Slipknot album that we were just talking about here. Now, as far as we know, still untitled, but we can finally expect it here August the 9th. I think pre-orders can start soon, if not already, if you want to get out in advance of it. But not only did they announce the new album release date, it's kind of a double announcement. We also got an announcement for Knotfest, which is pretty decent lineup of bands.
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, now there's a band Behemoth on here, which, you know, in the heavier music, I hear a lot of people that are super into Behemoth. They don't really do anything for me personally, but man, Gojira's on the bill, and I love Gojira.
Yeah, you know, and it's like the Behemoth guys, I've seen those guys, Behemoth, I should say.
Yeah.
I've seen those guys open up like for Slayer or something. And yeah, you know, it's like I really couldn't get into it. It's a little bit heavy for me as well, but their makeup's kind of cool. So
yeah, it's like, it's a death metal thing. It's kind of like a touch of black metal to it, which in black metal on any level I don't really connect with, but man, yeah. Gojira, that drummer alone, man, Gojira, if you don't know Gojira and you're into drums, you gotta check that band out. They're from France, I think.
Yeah. Great. And, you know, Corey says a new record is going to be heavier and darker and the whole thing. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I've heard this. I've been in this business a long time. And it's funny because, like, just like politicians say, we won't raise your taxes, which is their, like, slug line.
Yeah.
A lot of times artists will say, hey, this is the heaviest thing we've ever done. Okay, I'm glad it's heavy. Yeah. Is it any good?
Yeah.
See, you know what I'm saying?
I'm with you, yeah.
So it's like, you know, and I'm sure it will be good, but that's just like kind of one of their crutches and one of their lines.
The other one is like, we're going back to our roots with this one.
Yeah.
You know, we'll hear that a lot, too.
Yeah, so, you know, and it's like, you know, I hope it's good.
Yeah. Also on that Knotfest, of course, Volbeat and Slipknot will be headlining that.
Yeah, Volbeat's always killer to see live. And that means we got some new Volbeat stuff coming this year as well. So hopefully we can get that out here this before the summertime and move along. So, hey, you got a band that's made up of some other bands, it looks like.
Yeah, that's right. I thought I'd just throw this out there real quick. If you're looking for a new band to check out, it's made up of Damien Starkey of Puddle of Mud on vocals. You've got Sam Rivers from Limp Bizkit on bass, Adam Lateef, also from Puddle of Mud on guitar, and Bobby Amaru, formerly of Saliva, on drums. And they just released their debut, which is a self-titled album from the band Sleep Killers. And that came out, I think, this past Friday or something like that. So
yeah, I only know a couple of those names, actually, to be quite honest with you.
But you know all of the bands, which is why I thought I'd bring it up real quick. You know, if you're a big fan of Puddle of Mud, Saliva, Limp Bizkit, a bunch of former members are together in this new band.
So Bobby, Bobby's now, this is confusing. So is Bobby still in Saliva? I wonder.
I don't know.
He was the singer and a really good dude right there. And I'm not sure what's going on with that, but that band's kind of in a little bit disarray here and there.
Sleep Killers is the band and the album if you want to check it out.
And by the way, Brad Stewart from the book, you know, Useless Knowledge, Brad Stewart, who was an original member of Shinedown, is the co-writer for the song Control, and he helped write that song. because when Puddle of Mo was trying to get their traction going, they asked him if he would help to write a song. And of course, that became their biggest song. And he's now in Saliva. So that's the six degrees of separation.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, on to some other bands. Bush and Live now.
That's right.
I saw these guys tour with 16 Stone when it was brand new. Now they're kind of bringing that back and going out with the guys from Live.
That's right. I got a couple of 90s nostalgia stories here for you. And it was a big tour announcement. Bush and Live are teaming up for a big tour. And the big thing behind this is the 25th anniversary they're celebrating of, really, I was going to say their biggest albums, but possibly the only albums some people know them from.
Yeah, 16 Stone is pretty big.
16 Stone is pretty big, and Throwing Copper.
Yeah, great album.
Pretty much
Live.
All of the Live singles are on Throwing Copper. And I think Our Lady Peace is on this bill as well with these guys. So,
okay.
Yeah, the Ultimate Tour. I guess they... They got like a hyphen in there. It's all weird. So it's the Ultimate Tour.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, the guys from Live, I think Ed was off doing his own thing there for a long time. And they got back together and said, let's get the band back together. Make it darker and heavier.
And they're going to go back to the roots.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Put out a new album.
Hey, so you said 90s stuff. So Nirvana, this past Friday, March 1st, as we record this, was the 25th anniversary of their final show where they played. And I guess Chris Novoselic said something on stage about, this is it for us. You know, kind of joking that their fame was waning and stuff and that they weren't going to be back around anymore. But I guess that's what happened.
Well, yeah, certainly. We all know how that ended up. But there was the famed Live at the Paramount concert, which was actually released via DVD and Blu-ray a few years ago to celebrate the, I think, the 20th anniversary of Nevermind's release.
Okay.
Because this took place right after Nevermind came out. But now they are releasing Live at the Paramount on vinyl. So for a collector like you, Meltdown, that'll be out there. And that's actually coming out the day before Record Store Day.
Okay. Yeah, Record Store Day comes up in April. Do you have the date in there or no?
That's April 13th, and so this vinyl comes out on the 12th.
So switching gears a little bit, I'm trying to remember, when did School of Rock come out?
I think it was 2003 when I was looking at the story earlier. Okay, it was a while ago, yeah.
Yeah, so 15, 16 years ago.
This kid is now pushing 30. I did think to look that up. Okay. He's like 28 years old almost.
All right, so School of Rock with Jack Black and whatnot. I Serve Society by Rocking. It's actually a pretty good rock movie. And Joey Gatos Jr. was like one of the stars in that movie. And he was, a teenager at the time, probably, 15 or 16, whatever he was. And what was his name in the movie?
Zach Attack,
that's right. So anyway, so he's actually from the Detroit area. Although I've never met him or run into
neither.
Him, but he's in a little bit of trouble now.
Yeah, dude, he was picked up multiple times. I think four times over the course of 5 weeks. He was picked up and arrested. Here's the irony. Of course, as we just established, he's known from the movie School of Rock. Do you want to take a guess what he was stealing, Meltdown?
Well, I know what he was stealing because I read
that
story.
Game. So he was stealing guitars.
Guitars, that's right.
Yeah.
And some pretty good ones, too.
Yeah.
Does it have the list there of what he was stealing?
I don't have the list of what he was stealing, but again, the craziest part about it is that he just kept going back.
Yeah, so what he would do, allegedly, and what he would do is he would go in there and he'd try out some guitars and stuff, and he would just go, okay, hey, see you later, just walk out with them. And I know that one of them was a Gibson, I know for sure.
Yeah.
And there was, like you said, there was four of them, but man, and supposedly, once again, the story I read, allegedly, he got into a bad drug habit and stuff. So.
Oh, dude, that happens, man. That's,
these child stars and stuff, and this guy is supposed to be a pretty, decent musician and whatnot, and, so. Things aren't turning around. Things aren't going well for Joey Gatos Jr., Zach Attack from the School of Rock. So, hey, speaking of great guitar players, by the way, you got a story about Dave Mustaine and Dimebag Darrell. And I told you, said, hey, I want to talk about this story. I'm like, that's cool. I've heard this story before.
Yeah.
And so Dave talked about it. But in many ways, Dimebag Darrell and his brother Vinnie Paul are a lot like Eddie Van Halen and Alex Van Halen. And that's no revelation that no one's ever thought of before. But tell the story about Dave Mustaine.
Well, he was talking, I guess, regaling once again how close it was to Dimebag actually being a part of Megadeth, which if you can imagine, I wanted to bring it up because can you imagine what Megadeth would have sounded like back
then? I was just thinking about this. Yeah. It's like, thanks, Nick Menza.
Yeah, because that's the story. So he had met, Mustaine had met Dime, was looking for another guitarist. This is before Pantera really hit. This is like 1989.
Yeah.
So we're talking Pantera's album Power Metal had come out. So this is pre-Cowboys from Hell, pre-Vulgar Display of Power. So it's late 80s. And so he hits him up and he's looking for a new guitarist, and Dime was into it. Like, great idea, but can my brother come with us?
Well, I don't know if it was, can my brother? It's like, yeah, great idea. I'll join if you'll take my brother, too. I think that's kind of what it was.
He wanted to bring his brother with him. And at this point, again, Pantera's not huge yet. So Dave's like, well, who the hell's your brother?
Right.
It's like, Vinnie Paul. You never heard of Vinnie Paul or whatever? And he goes, he plays drums. And he goes, oh, well, here's the thing. I just hired Nick Menza.
Yeah.
So Dimebag passed because they didn't need a drummer.
I'll tell you what, man, that takes a lot of courage to. Looking back on it now, Megadeth at the time was starting to rise for sure. That was, I want to say, around Rust in Peace, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So anyways, they were starting to rise, and for a guy like Dimebag Darrell, not knowing what the future held for him, to like kind of turn it down because of his brother.
Yeah.
And we talked about this before, but, you know, I always felt whenever I had, you know, talks with Vinny or texting back and forth or whatever the case was, that there was a large chunk of him missing when his brother died. There's no question about it. And those guys were two peas in a pod. And I remember interviewing them one time back in like it was about, I don't know, maybe like 11 months before Dime got killed on stage. Yeah. And I asked him, I go, hey, do you guys remember the first song you guys ever played together? Yeah, it was Smoke on the Water. And it went like this. And they both, dan, dan, like both of them were doing it. It's like, you know, those guys would like finish each other's sentences. Yeah.
We reported on it on this podcast. I can't remember who the artist was, but talking about Dime and Vinny, whoever that artist was basically saying Vinny didn't want to, he'd pretty much given up ever since Dime had passed.
Yeah, you know? There was always, like I said, it always seemed like there was a piece from missing. Yeah. It's like, you know, they were so famous and so like intertwined and connected together that, you know, it's that's just the way it goes. But it's like, you know, that would have been cool to see Dimebag in Megadeth and stuff like that. And of course, VP, and, you know, that could have really changed the course of heavy metal. It would have been like one of those things from like Back to the Future where the guy's watching Chuck Berry, you know, or something. It's like, hey, man, Dimebag, this is Dave Mustaine.
Yeah. My question is, would Dave have been able to handle being in a band with another guitarist of that caliber?
That's a really good question, because you know, Dave has his own his own ego and stuff like that. Yeah. And man, that's, you know, that's the $64,000 question. Right. That should have been the but he told me, Dave told me, that this Kiko, he goes, man, this dude is just unbelievable. So maybe, you know, maybe that was what they were looking for. You know, maybe it would have pushed Dave to be that much better.
Well, we're also talking about 1989 Dave Mustaine, who just, you know, how many, not that long ago, less than 10 years ago, got kicked out of Metallica. I think he had a little bit more of a, maybe a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder back then than he's a little more secure in himself now, I think.
Yeah, chip on his shoulder for sure. So, and, I don't know. All sorts of problems.
Yeah.
With substance abuse, allegedly, and stuff.
I think maybe 2019 Dave Mustaine would have been able to handle Dime and his band better than 1989 Dave Mustaine.
Yeah, personally. You know, Dave Mustaine's taken his share of bumps down the road for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really like Megadeth, and David Ellefson's a good dude and stuff, so I always pull for those guys, and I like seeing them. And, you know, Rust in Peace was the first stuff I played off, you know, off the radio, Hangar 18, stuff like that.
Great record.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
So anyways, that's interesting. It's an interesting thought, but I've heard that story before, and this just came out in the news. Someone brought it up in an interview or something like that.
Well, we're also talking at this point, like I said, it's been 30 years now, so I mean, it's probably could have been what brought it up again.
Yeah, who knows? Anyways, well, that's going to do it for us. Give your socials there, brother.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF, at Talkin' Rock with One. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Mark Morton here on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. 248-586-2988 if you want to leave a voicemail for feedback and whatnot. Of course, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing it with your friends. And this is it. We'll do it all over again next time. Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.